Could you give me some background about yourself in the insurance world, and then specifically at Markel?
I have worked in financial services for over 35 years, insurance specifically for about 25 years, and I have worked across the whole value chain. I have worked as an insurer, at a broker, at an MGA, at a bank insurer, and in distribution. I have worked at businesses that distribute through brokers, through tied sales forces, and direct-to-consumer as well. I have broad experience, all UK-based. I worked for an Australian insurer for a period, but in the UK. I joined Markel 9 years ago to lead the UK business. I pulled together a group of businesses that Markel had acquired at that point and formed them as one UK business. I spent 9 years in that role very happily, and then left last year to finish my executive career and move more into non-executive and advisory roles.
Which companies did they acquire?
They were relatively small ones. One was a legal services company called Abbey Protection Group, which did legal expense insurance and tax insurance. During my tenure, we acquired another one called the Electrical Contractors Insurance Company, which is a small insurance company focused on electrical contractors. There were some other specialist businesses, which I am sure we will come to in the discussion. There is a consultancy company, for instance, in the care sector that was acquired. These were quite small businesses that were brought together. There was a Markel business that was already there, but they were all relatively small in the UK market and in national markets as a whole. National Markets was built mainly by Simon Wilson. Most of the entries into other countries were via acquisition. Germany, Netherlands, Canada were all acquisitions that Simon made.
I see they acquired Frederick's business. The legal insurance and electrical contractor insurance businesses they acquired, are they carriers or are they MGAs?
The legal expenses one was an MGA, and the electrical contractors insurance company was an insurance carrier.
What was the gross premium?
It was small at 25 to 30 million. That was why it was sensible to acquire a business like that, because it was subscale.
How many other insurers are out there that small?
There are a few others, and they tend to be quite similar. The Electrical Contractors Insurance Company was owned by the Electrical Contractors Association. There is another one out there called the National Pharmaceutical Association Insurance Company, which is owned by the National Pharmaceutical Association. They tend to be captives that they built for themselves around their own memberships.
How profitable are they at 25 million?
They are not very profitable, which is why they sold. They can be, but they don't have a lot of margin for error at that scale. That is the challenge.
And the specialist consultancy?
It was just a consultancy business. We also acquired part of a broker in 2019. Again, that was during my tenure. That was a broker business that focused on distributing direct to small SME businesses, mainly in the contracting space.
A retail broker?
We purchased the book where customers would buy direct from the website rather than through a broker. They built it themselves and we bought that from them and added it to a business called Markel Direct, which also sells direct to consumers, albeit small premiums. It is a small premium profitable business. Simon was trying to build that national markets presence under the guidance of William Stoven, who was president of International at the time. Obviously, the combined ratios perform differently. In the national markets business, generally you have more stability in the performance of that ratio, less volatility, because the risks are more consistent. In the London market, you are getting more complex risks, exposure to things like natural catastrophes, and some of the geopolitical tensions. Whereas in your own domestic economy, it is more predictable. Therefore, while you can get events, COVID would be one that impacted my business, generally you don't get those. Generally, you are getting normal trading losses through predictable events. Whereas in the London market, the complexity of risk and the geographical coverage generally means that you get more volatility in terms of good and bad years than you would in the domestic markets, which tend to be more predictable and more stable.
Why was Simon buying all these businesses?
To expand and get the platform in each of the countries to build those national markets. We didn't have anything in Germany, so Frederick's business was the example. We didn't have anything in the Netherlands, so Bob's business was an example. We did start from scratch in Spain.
Why buy versus grow organically?
Two things. One, time, just in terms of the time to build. And two, if you start with zero, back to our point earlier about small insurance companies, you haven't got a portfolio to absorb the risk that you want to write. Going in and buying a business that has relationships, some scale and distribution reach, that wasn't my execution, obviously, with Simon's. But in the Netherlands, Germany, and Canada, that really got growth and footprint early. My understanding is in Asia, we didn't buy. We started exactly in that buy and build, and it took quite a while. It got accelerated under Christian over the last few years. But if you think about the size of Asia, it really only got accelerated when Christian went in there to lead that. It has been bubbling along for a number of years. Going in and buying something does give you that credibility in the market in terms of relationships and some presence and understanding of the market. We have heard it a lot from Simon. Having a business that understands its market and is close to the customer is much more important than having someone in the center who is trying to tell someone locally what to do. Frederick understanding the German market and having a business there was much better than us sending someone out to establish something in Germany.
Simon restructured Markel to follow this model that you had internationally, which is going closer to the customer. How do you see the risks of this?
You still have overriding governance centrally, so you still have underwriting authority passed down from the center to the local businesses. But within that authority, we are running our own business within the organization. I would have a chief underwriting officer who could write up to X million of risk. Beyond that, it clearly has to go into the international chief underwriting officer. You have the limits that you place on what you can write locally. You set your reinsurance appetite across the organization. Interestingly, the insurance company has a much greater appetite than the local markets for risk, because you are trying to deliver your own business results. That closeness, ownership, and the entrepreneurial spirit that you are trying to stimulate within the organization means that you want people to feel responsibility and accountability for their own results. What you then have is clearly an appetite. If I have a relatively small product line, I can't afford to take a single big loss, so I will want a lower level of reinsurance than we want at the group level, where we can afford to take a significant loss. Markel allows the units locally to buy reinsurance programs internally. I would buy a program from Markel that Markel would effectively self-insure to a level and then reinsure out to the market. That then gave us the comfort locally that we were taking the right levels of risk to our own P&Ls, but also gave the opportunity for the group to leverage its balance sheet and take the bigger risks relevant to the business, the size that it is. A business writing £350 million in the UK is quite different to a business writing $10 billion. That mechanic around how you try and support local behavior and local ownership maximizes the economics of the group.
I am trying to understand the underwriting authority you have locally. Where is the line? Let's say electrical contractors market or cyber, for example. Choose a product line. How much authority did you have from corporate Markel?
Because I ran the business effectively as the CEO, I had no underwriting authority. I had a chief underwriting officer.
A UK chief underwriting officer?
Yes.
Did he report to international?
No, he reported to me. In each of the businesses, whether it be me in the UK, Frederick in Germany, or Dave in Canada, we are running our own business. We are running distribution, claims, and underwriting. In my case, I was leading a team of 500 people across the UK, doing everything in the UK apart from some small elements like actuarial, which is central, or financial accounting. In terms of running the trading organization, underwriting, claims, and distribution, that sits with each of the regions, and they run it all. From an underwriting point of view, my underwriting officer would have a delegated authority from the international chief underwriting officer, and that would be fit for our market. Very rarely would we need to refer a risk up because the limits that we are generally working on are set at the policy or product level within the UK market. In the London market, that is going to happen more in terms of referrals because the risks that you are writing are more random. But in the UK, you are tending to write to, depending on the product, 5 million limits. If you are writing to 5 million limits most of the time, sometimes 10 million limits, you're not really going to have to refer up the chain because you have already got that authority down within your own chief underwriting officer.
How do you see this shift that Simon is pushing in Markel down to the front line? How is that different in the US?
I think of it more from a customer perspective than I do in underwriting. In the US, the person responsible for writing new business might be a different person to the person who is responsible for renewing the business. The underwriting lines by product didn't report locally. They reported through underwriting to the center. Product line ownership reported through to a completely different member of the executive team to the person who owned distribution in North America. I think the argument is the decision, there wasn't a single point of ownership for a decision. The product person and the distribution person weren't in the same line. You could have had a difference of opinion about what should happen on a particular risk, be it conditions imposed or the price. The only place that came together was at the board. What Simon is now doing is saying, Wendy, you are responsible for this chunk, and you are responsible for everything. You will have distribution, underwriting, and claims. The same model that we have been deploying in international. Wendy will now have that responsibility across everything that Wendy does. Whereas before, she was really only responsible for distribution. And that decision around what would happen, she wouldn't have had her own underwriting person before. It would have been a product person that reported up through the underwriting team. Now she will have her own chief underwriting officer. She will be responsible for distribution. She will have her own claims team. She will be able to replicate, and I've had this conversation directly with Wendy previously, that feeling of ownership, accountability, and responsiveness to the market, which is harder when you are running two lines all the way up to the top.
How do you think this is going to impact the U.S. business?
I think the outcome will be, from what I have seen from my experience in terms of the way we have done it, people who really care about the business and getting the best out of the business. I'm not saying that people didn't want that before and everyone tried their best, but I personally believe it is easier in this model because that is the model I have worked in all the time I have been at Markel. It feels like I get up in the morning thinking it is my business and I have to try and do the best I can within the family that is Markel. I think you have a real benefit in accountability, but also responsibility to the parent, so it doesn't stimulate rogue behavior at all. Quite the opposite. You are trying to ensure that you get the best outcome for the business. That outcome is measured ultimately in profitability. If Wendy can drive increased profitability in that organization, that is absolutely aligned to what we are trying to achieve as a group.
How were you incentivized as a CEO of Markel UK? And with the context of, if you are writing long-tail business, you might not be around to see the real loss ratio. How do you align writing long-term business with P&L?
Generally in the region, the tail isn't as long as it is in some of the London markets. Not exclusively, but there is still a tail.
Are national markets shorter tail than London?
I believe it is shorter, but it is still a longer tail than personal property.
What would the average length be?
It depends. Some of the liability risk can be a number of years in terms of coming out. But most of the combined ratio in my business would, to any large degree, be settled over a 2 to 3 year period. Markel is always quite prudent in its reserving. If we put a reserve on something, normally you are expecting some release over time rather than necessarily strengthening over time.
How would you evaluate what is prudent and what is not prudent?
We operate on a reserving basis, which is slightly more prudent than a pricing basis. A pricing basis tries to get to the best estimate, while a reserving basis has a margin above that to ensure it is in the reserves. On top of that, when you get to the group level, my understanding is there is an element of prudence added again. If you look at the history, it has not always been the case, but normally we are releasing reserves, not strengthening them. There is a philosophy which you will have heard Simon, and before that Jeremy, and before that Richie, talk about, which is always looking to have reserves that are less likely to be deficient and more likely to be releasing. That philosophy sits through the organization. To your point on compensation, unless it has changed over the last 6 months, the way we would reward is everyone in the UK business unit, and this would be consistent in each of the business units, would be given a rating based on their performance against key objectives, like you would in most organizations. They would get a bonus based on their performance, then that bonus would be leveraged 75% based on the UK performance and 25% based on the international performance. The people in the UK business got rewarded on the UK result. People in the German business got rewarded on the German result.
What do you mean by performance or result? How would you measure it?
Combined ratio.
How do you measure the combined ratio for a given year, given the long tail? Would you simply do it on an annual basis?
It is the combined ratio that is reported for that 12-month period. That consistency of how you reward over the period. I have been there 9 years, so for 9 years, I have had that assessment, and therefore it all washes through over that period.
Simon is pushing authority down to the front line, closer to the customer, where they better know the risks. It seems like they are incentivizing more on a P&L basis, locally. How do you balance growing gross written premium, writing new business, and containing the underwriters to write good business and not unprofitable business?
We all have an ambition for growth. In the business, we set out 5-year strategic plans. And I said, I'm not going to be around for the next 5 years, but You set out that 5-year plan, which is generally predominated by growth. You have a lot of growth ambition in the business. You do not have people saying, "How can I shrink?" You have a business that is saying, "We could be bigger." We are still relatively small market share in the UK, even though we have grown a lot over the last 9 years. There's plenty of room for growth, and there's definitely appetite and a strategic direction that we should be going for growth. But not growth at any cost. Definitely growth at the right profit margin. Therefore, you are trying to grow the business and make sure you bring the profits that go with it. The challenge in insurance is you do not really understand the profitability until you are about to hit the road. This is where you have to be careful as an insurer, generally, by picking the products to grow in the right markets. You will come around to this in the conversation around specialist markets, trying to grow in a market where you have some knowledge and insight versus trying to grow in markets that are commoditized. We talked about property earlier. There are lots of people out there that will write property. There are much fewer people that will write care businesses like we would write in the UK. We have knowledge of the care businesses in the UK that other people did not have. Therefore, our ability to grow in that sector profitably, which we have done substantially from COVID onwards, is because of the knowledge that we have acquired. So you can grow and you can make profit.
You were not incentivized on gross written premium as a leader personally. It was just on the combined ratio of your unit?
I would have a gross premium target.
How would the bonus work?
It differs by level of person in the organization. It is basically a percentage of your salary. This would be the same for all leadership positions. You would have some financial targets, some people targets, and some significant change initiatives, which would all contribute to that base position that says, this is how you were assessed for the job that you did in the year. The bonus would get awarded on that, then leveraged based on profitability of your business unit.
Would your targets be gross written premium and strategic change?
Yes.
Was the combined ratio separate?
You still have it as part of your targets because that is financial.
Are you saying there is a combined ratio which is multiplied by the profitability?
Yes. I have worked in other organizations, and Markel is really well balanced in terms of giving you a sense of ownership without being too aggressive. I have worked in some private equity-backed businesses that are far more aggressive. When you hear Tom talk about investing in Markel and compounding value year after year, that mindset bleeds through the organization. It is not just about compounding, but about being here for the long term, doing the right thing, and knowing the right thing will bear the right results over the long term. That is really refreshing because in other organizations, there's a lot more urgency, which can sometimes lead to more short-term decisions rather than longer-term ones. While we are talking about these factors that sit around the edge, which are all important, I would be really surprised if anyone in Markel said they get up thinking about their bonus. I don't think that is how it works. People enjoy working there in the main. You set your plans out and feel that sense of accountability for the plan. It feels like my plan for my business, and I want to deliver on that plan. If I deliver on that plan, I will get well rewarded. And if I don't deliver on that plan, I won't get as well rewarded. That doesn't mean there isn't an approval process for the plan. Of course there is. But I don't get targets given to me. I agree on my business plan that gets approved.
If I spoke to you in 5 years and Markel's U.S. business has declined, for whatever reason, under this strategy, what do you think the reason would be? Excluding catastrophe risk or COVID-2, where could this go wrong strategically in the U.S. compared to the U.K. market, structurally?
I would be surprised if it went wrong because of this strategy. Market dynamics may impact it, but I'm a fan of this as much as Simon is because it is the model that I have operated under. If you ask me to operate the other model, which is more central command and control, that is not for me. I don't see the model failing in that regard. If you were to ask, what could really go wrong? The only thing is if you have people who don't excel in that space. I cannot see a customer saying they preferred having 2 or 3 different people to go to when they weren't quite sure who to contact.
You need to have the leaders.
You need people who excel in that business leader role we just talked about. Not a sales leader, claims leader, or an underwriter. You need people who understand they need to bring a range of disciplines together when historically they might have focused down a functional line. An experience I had when I came here, one of the things I inherited, is we have our own law firm in the UK, Markel Law. I had never run a law firm before, so trying to understand what that requires of you in terms of differences and how you understand the economics of that business versus the economics of insurance, that is something you have to learn reasonably quickly. I suspect someone like Wendy will love having that accountability, that broad peace. Wendy has been with Markel for a number of years. She is not an insurance specialist by background. I think she was military, if I remember correctly. If you are saying it didn't go right, I would say it is because the people didn't take the opportunity to deliver on that role. That might not just be at the most senior level. It might go down the levels. But it won't surprise you to hear me say I think it is the right model. It has worked well in international. The results are going well at the moment. They have had times when they weren't so good, but at the minute, they are going well. I think if you got the people in a room, Frederick, Dave, and Andrew McMillan, they would all say something similar around how they feel like they have been given the accountability and responsibility to lead that business, rather than refer up into the center all the time.
For Markel UK, what is the gross written premium split between London and national?
Those national markets businesses, be it Europe, Canada, or the UK, they are dealing with local and regional brokers who are dealing with local, regional, and national clients. But the risks generally can all be packaged locally and are written normally 100% by one insurer. That doesn't mean I write everything on that client because I wouldn't write their motor, for instance, but I can write their property and liability risks as one policy. More importantly, as a broker, I generally don't split the risk. I might put property with one person and liability with another insurer. There might be some layering for expensive risk, but normally I am placing with one insurer. In the London market, it is a subscription model, and people are taking percentages because of the complexity or the size of the risk. Most of the distribution is through regional brokers. It is important to recognize the brokers organize themselves in the same way. Gallagher and Ardonagh will have London market and regional brokers. While some people have tried to explain themselves as a broker as being one organization, they are really not. London market brokers are a completely different distribution to regional brokers. That doesn't mean they cannot access each other because they are trying to as one organization. But practically, the client determines whether you end up with me in national markets or whether you end up in London.
Is your business with 500 odd people and roughly 350 million premium all national markets?
Yes.
In the Lloyd's London business, how much is that for Markel International?
I honestly can't remember off the top of my head, but between 1.5 to 2 billion. The London market business is bigger. London market in this context also includes Asia, although I think that has just changed recently under Andrew's leadership, who is treating Asia now more like a local market. The concept is if it is going through Lloyd's, then managed through one team. If it is getting placed locally, then it is managed through the local team.
In your national market, would you also have property risk in there, but a different type of property risk you get in London?
Yes, I wouldn't normally write property risk as the lead product. I would write liability with property following. If I was writing in the care sector, which we wrote a lot of, what I really want is the liability risk. The reason I want the liability risk is because I am maximizing the float between premium and claim, which from Markel's point of view creates float best for ventures or investments. I want to write liability, and the convenience is that the customer sometimes wants the business with one insurer. I will write property normally off the back of my liability risk. That will be property in the care sector, or it might be in the technology sector or in construction. That is only because I am writing the liability risk. I wouldn't be putting big property covers out there. We didn't even write shops and offices. Property is really a package as part of the liability lead.
Can you give me a sense of the national market? How many end insured customers did you have, and what is the average premium per year?
The first question is difficult because we use lots of numbers. If you look on our website, we say we are protecting up to 1 million customers in the UK, and that is true, but some of that coverage includes...
Does the coverage include employees?
No. For instance, a reasonable client of Markel's is the Federation of Small Businesses. What we are doing there is giving them legal expenses insurance and tax fee protection insurance. You might have 150,000 FSB members that are protected under one policy. It will be in the tens of thousands. The average premiums have quite different ranges. If you think about SMEs generally, you will write some premiums over £1 million and others at £100.
Do you go that low?
Yes, but they will be written directly.
How much is direct versus through a broker?
Brokers are going to be 80 to 85% of everything that is written in the UK.
What about retail versus wholesale brokerage?
It is almost all retail. The only wholesale I would mention from a UK perspective is putting some business behind MGAs. but that is relatively small.
How much went through MGAs?
It is not a big number. Our preference was to try and have a direct relationship with the client. Strategically, with MGAs, you can get a significant uplift when you write it, but you will write it at thinner margins, and it can leave you in a lump just as it came to you in a lump. Your preference is very much to write open market rather than MGAs.
What do you mean open market versus MGAs?
What I mean is policy by policy, rather than putting capacity behind MGAs.
Why is it thinner margins?
Because they are negotiating with a group of insurers to take a subscription of their MGA capacity, and it is a more competitive environment. They are doing more of the value chain, so they are doing the policy issuance.
If they have lower loss ratios than you can do internally, how would it be thinner margin?
The loss ratio is going to come through to you, but they are looking for enhanced commissions and enhanced brokerage to cover their extra costs in the value chain. Markel would consider itself a specialist, and therefore we would struggle to say someone is more specialist than us in what we were doing.
In everything you do?
No, but if you look at the sectors we are in, care, legal expenses, professional indemnity, construction, you are quite specific about the risk you are taking. There are two types of MGAs out there. There is someone who is saying, I can give better service. And there are some that are saying, I can be more specialist in a sector. For those that are giving better service, I think we would argue against that as Markel, because we were voted number one for service from brokers for the last 3 years and have just been voted again. Brokers are saying Markel is the best at commercial lines insurance from a service point of view in the UK.
Does that cover claims and time to buy?
Claims, renewal, and issuance across the cycle. Insurance Times ranked us number one for the last 3 years. We give really high levels of service. An MGA that thinks they have a particular specialty, and they will because there are plenty out there that are very niche, normally do not have the scale to be able to deploy a decent amount of premium. You have to remember that you are still the insurer, even if they are the MGA. From a regulator point of view, it is still your responsibility. We did not put a lot behind MGAs. We were much more focused on trying to build relationships with brokers, be considered as a partner insurer, for want of a better word, with those brokers, and then get the brokers to place the risk that we want with us.
Why not buy a specialist MGA in a niche area in the UK to grow?
We did. It was called Abbey Protection Group on legal. It was called Electrical Contractors Insurance Company. Where those opportunities exist, it makes sense to buy and bring that capability in-house. But there is not a lot left of scale.
Are you saying there are not many companies out there?
Yes, because brokers like PIB and Brown & Brown are buying the MGAs now.
What do you think about that?
I think it makes sense. It also gives challenges to a broker. From a regulatory point of view, placing business internally is actually harder than placing it to an external insurer from a regulated perspective. That consolidation that has been happening in the market has been fueled by a lot of private equity money that has come in. Not just private equity, but Brown & Brown and Gallagher too. There was an appetite for growth. Those brokers have done a great job growing and consolidating, but there are not a lot of scale opportunities left now to consolidate in that broker market. There are still many small brokers, but there are not many where people can go and acquire a broker that might be making $10 million in profit. I was on a webinar with Insurance Times yesterday where they were talking about this. The flow of M&A activity has reduced quite a lot in 2025. Because if you have eaten up all the next size down in fish, you have to eat an awful lot of the really small ones to make a difference. That will be an interesting dynamic in the market as we move forward. That consolidation tends to drive more power to the broker. It also tends to drive more efficiency to the insurer. Therefore, it tends to uplift brokerage slightly to the consolidating brokers. If you look ahead, that consolidation is going to be harder for them to achieve. And even if a big one ate a big one, that really is not going to make a great deal of difference. It is when you are sweeping up all those inefficiencies into one more efficient beast. Hopefully that brings more stability now to brokerage going forward.
What do you mean by more stability?
As those brokers consolidate, it tends to drive brokerage up. The brokers leverage their position in the value chain to get a higher commission.
How did your ceded commission change as the consolidations massively changed?
I was also on the other side of it for a few years because I was at a broker before I came here. It has been happening for about 20 years, but it depends where you are. Broker consolidation has been a good thing for Markel. It has brought together businesses to a good size where an insurer can build a strategic relationship and liaise with people who are disciplined about how many markets they want to use in placement. If you are really rated by the broker, you can establish yourself as a preferred market with a broker. That is easier for a company like Markel, who is relatively small in the UK region compared to Aviva or Zurich. To deal with a smaller number of stronger, more strategic brokers is a good thing for Markel. Over the last 9 years I've been there, that has really helped Markel deliver for brokers in a strategic way and actually grow through those brokers as a result.
So you get more premium, but you might pay a couple more percentage points to them because they have captured more of the market by rolling up the brokers.
Yes, and there is also an efficiency in that. You might then get a benefit back on your expense ratio. Even if your percentage points move a point or two, your quantum still might increase your absolute value. It has been a positive for Markel. Looking forward, I think it is hard to see lots more consolidation that is going to drive more pressure on brokerage. Having said that, if I am a broker going into a soft market, then I have to try and find some value somewhere.
They are certainly not going to stop putting up their prices, I imagine.
You have to remember, if I am a broker, brokerage is only one of the elements of income I receive. I also get fees direct from clients and through premium finance. There are other things that I do that generate value in the value chain.
They are now taking more risk through MGAs with regards to profit and commission.
But genuinely, what has been happening for an insurer like Markel, I think has been a positive, because it allows you to communicate with fewer, more powerful people on the basis of quality. Brokers have rated them number one because they like trading with them.
Why do they like trading with Markel?
Specialist knowledge, genuinely. I do believe specialism and service. They have been rated as number one because it matters. Having come from a broker to work in an insurer, I think you have a different view of brokers than if you have just spent your life as an insurer. There is an element of being responsive. There is an element of putting your time into brokers, supporting them on difficult risks. We proved ourselves through COVID. We paid a lot of money out in claims, but we were one of the insurers that paid straight away. There were insurers that did not and wanted to go to court. You suddenly ended up in a situation where the first payment that Markel made on COVID claims, which was only an interim payment, was in April 2020. COVID only happened in March 2020, so that does not mean everything was paid straight away, as it takes time for the claim to develop, but we paid. The general principle was that our policy wording suggested we had not insured it, but our policy should pay, so we paid. We took a hit in the P&L that year, but brokers came back to us afterwards and asked if they could move other cases to us.
I spoke to some brokers, and they said they like working with Markel because Markel pays them higher commissions. This is mainly in the U.S., compared to the likes of Chubb and some of those more aggressive companies that might haggle more. How do you see the philosophy at Markel in terms of managing the expenses that you might pay brokers?
Were you saying they get paid more because the premiums are higher, or they get paid more because they get higher brokerage?
Higher brokerage.
I am confident in saying that in the UK, we would pay market rates for brokerage. Remember that in the UK, we have new regulation around consumer duty. That means the broker and the insurer have to demonstrate the value for the client in the value chain.
The US might be different.
We know the commission rates because we sit there talking to all the brokers. We pay market rates. I do not think we were paying more to buy business. We were seen as the best care market and the best PI market. So people wanted to come to Markel. The challenge with Markel is that we were not always the cheapest. We price fairly, but we do not price the cheapest because then you cannot give the service. If the broker can do their job correctly and they sell Markel at a higher price than selling someone else's, then they will get more pounds for that in their brokerage. But the customer will get better value for that. Because when they come to claim or if they need support, one of the things that we did well was in the care sector, we had this consultancy business I talked about earlier that we bought. They are care specialists, not insurance at all. When they are not working for Markel, they work for Ofsted and the Care Quality Commission. When we look at a care risk, we are looking at the liability risk. We are not counting fire extinguishers around the property. We are looking at your policies and procedures, and these people will help us assess the risk. More importantly, if that customer then buys a policy from Markel, Markel will give that customer free days of these consultants in their business. The reason for that is it improves the risk. They love it because they get a better business and Markel gets a better risk. You might have a higher expense base off the back of that, but you will also get a lower loss ratio off the back of that.
You mentioned you did not grow into MGAs. So how did you grow in the national markets business?
primarily through those strategic broker relationships, but not exclusively. If I go back to when I joined, I previously worked for what is now called Ardina. It was Towergate when I was there. We did not really consider brokerages like that. What I mean by that is, we would consider a broker to be the office in Leeds or Manchester. It was built very much as a local business. We put effort into really thinking about how we engage with strategic brokers, super regional brokers, and more local independent brokers. Those strategic ones had a dedicated team focused on them that would also work with them in the regions. The super regional ones would have account management around them in a different way. The more local independent brokers could still have local attention, but they would tend to deal more electronically or over the telephone. We put effort behind where the consolidation was and where the volume of brokers are. It is easier to communicate through that organization about what your proposition is. The business has gone from one that really was not known at all. Markel in the regions was known in the market, but it really was not known that much locally. It was thought of as a specialist PI insurer up in Leeds. It has gone from that to now being voted number one for the last 3 years and won lots of awards. We put a lot of effort behind making sure that we deliver service, and it is great to get recognized for it. But that recognition then stimulates more market interest into what Markel is doing.
I am looking at the combined ratio here for international that they show in their report. 2019 was 99%. COVID year was 118%. 2021 was 88%. 2022 was 94%. 2023 was 87%. 2024 was 77%. How do you see combined ratios for specialty markets internationally over the next 5 years?
I don't think you are keeping in the 70s. If you think about the specialty market generally, as long as people remain specialists, your knowledge and expertise in the market should smooth through the cycles. We are currently going through a bit of a soft cycle, but we will come out of that. My view is that you should be able to hold your loss ratios more or less through the cycles. You should be able to price in any inflation that might come through. If you stick to your core markets, you should know what you are writing. You will get the odd shock, but you should be able to remain consistent. My point earlier on commission rates and brokerage, I think there is some stability in that going forward. That doesn't mean you won't get squeezed slightly more. You probably will, but there won't be the logic that says we have doubled our scale and therefore can reduce rates significantly. The challenge then comes down to what you can do around the expense ratio. That report has some prior year releases in it, so I'm talking about underlying expense ratios now. I think that is where there is opportunity. But to my point earlier, you have to be careful that you don't reduce your expense ratio and improve it while worsening your loss ratio. Some of those loss mitigation actions are in your expense ratio. You get lower expenses, lower losses. But the bigger challenge on specialty going forward is that you become less specialized.
What do you mean by commoditized specialty and specialized specialty?
Liability insurance and property insurance are generic. But if you look at it by sector, such as care, construction, biomedical, or tech, you start to build a combined insurance offer for that sector and tweak things that mean more for that customer in terms of their protection. You have essentially helped a broker by identifying the segment where they are going to place the risk for Markel, as opposed to a general commercial combined product. Identifying that sector or subsector and remaining focused on it, having knowledge in your business and using data to supplement that in terms of understanding the risk, that is specialism. My observation is you have to be careful sometimes that people who are specialists then go for growth and their specialism starts to bleed out. They end up in something more generic. When you end up in something that is less specialist, all those controls around your loss ratios are harder because you haven't got the specialist knowledge. What you thought was specialist is now less specialist. You are suddenly open to different types of risks that you haven't thought about. That is where the challenge may come for businesses generally in a softer cycle. People can go for growth, and by going for growth in a softer cycle, you tend to go into more standardized areas. The loss ratios you are seeing there are specialist loss ratios, not just loss ratios, combined ratios, specialist combined ratios. Markel is quite open about saying, we want to try and achieve a 90% combined ratio on a long-term basis, and that should be achievable. But if I was writing shops and offices and motor, I wouldn't find that very achievable. The trick is to stay true to your specialism. If you are going to enter a new specialism, you have to bring the people in. Take time, build the product, and bring in the experience and knowledge to take you into that sector.
How about the expense ratio? There has been one question for investors over the years around Markel. Rightly or wrongly, they compare it to Kinsale and their impressively low expense ratio. I think it is 35 or 36 at the group level. Where do you see the biggest opportunities to reduce that in your business or internationally?
You have to be really careful about the interplay between expense ratio and loss ratio generally.
What do you mean by that? You mentioned this care consultancy, which is an expense, but that is rare.
That is rare, but I will give you another example which is less rare. In legal expenses insurance, it is pretty common to have a legal helpline. We would insure commercial legal expenses. So you as an employer would be insured against employment disputes with your employees.
Is that employer's liability effectively, or is it different?
No, it is legal expenses insurance.
So that is a separate line that would cover my expenses as an employer, or would it be part of employer's liability?
It is a separate section in your insurance, but we would write it. There aren't that many companies that have the license to write legal expenses insurance in the UK. But you might have an issue with your employee. You would then call our helpline, and we will help guide you through how to handle that employee so it didn't result in an employment dispute. We would give you copies of agendas to use for the meetings and help you prepare minutes for meetings. It is a 24/7 legal advice line. That line would take 250,000 calls a year into Markel Law. If you were any legal expenses insurer, you would have that line. What you wouldn't necessarily have, though, is it manned by fully qualified lawyers and solicitors. Markel Law was.
Was that separate to your law firm, or is that the law firm you were talking about?
Technically, they are in the law firm because they are lawyers, but they don't operate in the fee-earning part of the law firm.
Why have you got a law firm?
When we bought Abbey Legal, they had a law firm. We have two parts of it. We have the part that supports the legal advice line. Then we have the other part that handles some of the claims. When a normal insurer reaches a certain point with their claims, they place them with an external law firm. We can place them internally with our lawyers, which means we get excellent feedback loops. The underwriter, lawyer, and claims handler sit together discussing what went right and wrong. It is also cheaper. The margin on your law firm is retained within your business, as opposed to going outside. The interplay between how much I spend on expenses versus what I get in loss ratio is important. Be careful, because even things like the amount you invest in your claims handling team matter. We would have former lawyers in our claims handling team. Some people might just have more process-oriented people. Someone who can spot what is going on, stop it early, and change the direction is going to save you money. Within the business, you need to be careful about that. I think there is a benefit around scale. As the companies grow and they are all on trajectories, there should be more scale efficiency. I think things like digitalization and augmentation of risk will free up more time for the underwriters so that they are focused on underwriting decisions rather than collecting data. I think that is an opportunity. Simon has been quite vocal about reducing the center costs and getting things pushed out. I am a believer that a more centralized model is less cost efficient. That will have an efficiency.
What did you aim for in the expense ratio? What would be a good year for you?
Every year was a good year. My business would not have the best expense ratio, but it would have a very good combined ratio.
You had a lot of expenses there in the care consultancy businesses and the law firm, so it must have been 30 to 40%. But then you are getting lower loss.
National markets businesses tend to be less cost efficient than London market.
You need more.
If I am in a local national markets business and I am writing 1 million pounds and I want to buy 2 million pounds, I have got to write twice as many policies as I wrote before. Effectively, if I am in London market and I am writing 1 million pounds and I want to write 2 million pounds, I just write a different number on the piece of paper. Instead of taking 5% share, I will take 10% share. Therefore, the people that you need to process and service in London market, a lot of the time you will follow, not lead. So you're not even dealing with premium issues, claims, or renewals. It depends on what position you take in the chain as to what overhead you then sit behind that.
Does Markel mainly do excess in London?
I do not know if we call it excess in the same way. I'm not an expert on it, so I will be careful what I say.
But they are not first in line taking the risk.
They will be on some, but I do not know the proportions.
At a high level, how would you compare the combined ratio of London versus national markets in the UK?
The London one will be more volatile because of catastrophes, geopolitics, and the size of the risks. I am talking academically now, not Markel, but in better years, you would expect better performance in international markets. Then you will get the odd bad year. I think what we have demonstrated over the number of years is that national markets is delivering a consistent combined ratio. From my experience, that combined ratio is a very good ratio, and it definitely meets the target that is required. It is doing it over a long period of time. You do not tend to get the big fluctuations. Because we started from a relatively low base, getting improved cost efficiency, you are getting good market growth, and our market share is still low. You still have good opportunity ahead of you. You have the challenge of a softening market at present.